Welcome to the Directing Animation Livecast with Scott Weiser. Now that I'm done directing the development and first episode of the second series of Space Station Animation, I'm joining up with Steamroller Animation to push the boundaries of the art form. Thanks to the support of so many of you, I'm continually developing more than 10 dynamic feature film pitches while mastering the art of telling deeply meaningful stories. Today, we have Everett Downing Jr. on the show. I am so happy I got you on the show. It was kind of, you know, a stab in the dark, and I'm so glad it happened. I actually tried to hunt you down at Lightbox, and I'm so glad that you're here to talk about your extremely talented background. If you don't know Everett's work, he just launched a series called My Dad the Bounty Hunter on Netflix. That was his brainchild, which is amazing. However, his background goes really, really deep. He's been in the industry for many years, working as both an animator and a story artist, which isn't extremely common for people to work in both of those at a high, high level. And he's worked on projects such as Ice Age as an animator, Ratatouille, Up, WALL-E, Maya and the Three recently, which is another Netflix series, which you can see behind him. There's a picture from Maya and the Three, a piece of art there. And he's also won an Emmy for his directing an episode of We the People. You can see that other poster behind him. You can also see he's a family man, you know, and an extremely hard worker. What a hustler. And can't wait to get more into it. But is there anything else you'd like to add to that intro?
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for inviting me on the show. This is exciting. I want to make one clarification. The show, My Dad the Bounty Hunter, it was a co-creation of me and my partner, Patrick Harpin. So
yes, awesome.
Really, really excited about that work. But yeah, let's get into it.
Co-creations, though. I mean, a lot of times when people are known as directors, the studio came up with the project and then they assign a director to it, right? So. Yeah. You know, I would really like to get into, you talked about before the show, about how you've had all these years of hustle and trying to get project after project going. And then that one panned out. What was the catalyst that made that happen? Let's talk about the journey there.
All right, how much time do we have? No, it's a very cool story, but it's very convoluted. You know, as you know, we do this for a long time. I decided in basically 2014, I decided I want to try to direct something, I want to start pitching. So that's really kind of when I started pitching a lot. And I've been pitching for years. And there was one project that I've been pitching around town for a long time, almost since I started. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's called Book of Mojo.
I am familiar with Book of Mojo.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did an Indiegogo for it. I wasn't able to ever finish the project, but I did pitch it around several places and it got a lot of heat, but never no one ever ended up biting the bullet and going for it. I pitched it several times over at Netflix actually. And I got a lot of traction over there. There's actually one of the executives, Jenna Boyd. I pitched her several times. She really liked it. She kept telling me, "This is great. Keep working on it. Keep working on the pitch." And after the second pitch, I was like, okay, you know what? I really want to make sure this next time lands. So I'm not going to pitch it again until I feel like it's really singing. Right.
Yeah.
And around this time, it's so complicated. This time I was actually, I'm like, let me figure this out. I'm not going to pitch it anymore. I was working at Sony, mm-hmm. right. And, I was in development at Sony and, my development executive was, Karen Tolliver, who's now actually running feature animation over at Netflix.
Yeah.
And while I was working on it, she, which I didn't know at the time, was a producer for Hair Love.
Oh.
And Yeah, exactly. And she asked me to consult a little bit on it. And I sat down with her and Matthew Cherry and basically asked them a bunch of questions and gave them a bunch of advice. And after a week or so later, she called me up and invited me to co-direct on that. And
that's awesome.
That whole track actually was able to get it was a phenomenal journey, first of all.
Yeah.
And that was able to give me a lot of traction, I think. So
yeah.
When I ended up on Buy-In the Three working on that one, Jenna Boyd ran into me and she's like, "Hey, do you still have that Mojo idea?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I do." And she's like, "I want to introduce you to someone." And she introduced me to Megan Casey, who just happened to be the executive on My End of Three.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she loved the idea. But at the same time, we were pitching Mojo. We were actually pitching Dad around town, and developing it at Sony. So we met I met Pat at Sony, and we kind of started developing this as like kind of like our like lunchtime sort of like passion project, basically. And we had pitched it around several places, and it had started getting some traction at Skydance. Actually, it was about to go to Skydance, and then I think Jorge kind of like let Megan know, like, hey, so like Everett's really doing some really cool stuff, you should maybe like take a look at it. And she ended up, she's like, what's this thing, what's he got at Skydance? And she ended up asking me like, what is it? And I gave her an elevator pitch for my dad at Barnyard, and she's like, I want that too. So she wanted to get both Mojo and Dad. But she really felt like these are both really great ideas, but like, you know, I really think that Dad is like super special. Like, I want to start this one first. I was like, all right, let's do it. So that kind of set me off on the path, you know? So like I said, it was very, very twisty, very windy, but pretty cool.
It sounds so familiar.
Yeah. I mean, that's how these things happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of like, okay, you have a little thread here. So you kind of hold on to that little thread, and then, oh, there's another one. And you kind of start to kind of pull them together, and they start to build a tapestry, right?
Absolutely.
Where, you know, most of the time is, at least, you know, when we dream about how we're going to get our project off the ground, we think, oh yeah, I'm just going to pitch this one project. It's going to happen. And yeah.
That's never the case.
Yeah. I was actually working for a Kickstarter company back when the Hair Love, when both of your Kickstarter, your crowdfunded campaigns came up. That's why I was so familiar with them, because I was actually consulting for this company, building them a video and page design team. And
that's amazing.
So I studied them. I backed Hair Love. It was amazing to see that one, like, you know, be pitched and then make a bunch of money and then happen. And then I walked to Walmart and the book's on the shelf, you know?
Yeah, it was amazing.
It really was an amazing thing. And
that was incredible.
Those waves is what it seems.
Yeah, it was one of those things, like, I remember seeing the Hair Love Kickstarter and going like, this is special. I want to, you know, I want to contribute. And I even like emailed the, you know, Matt and those guys, and like, hey, I'm an animation professional. I'd love to be a part of this, you know, like, but they were getting so much like,
oh yeah, I did the same thing.
Yeah. So I'm sure they were like, I thought it was really funny that like the serendipity of like,
it still happened.
It's incredible.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that happens. That happens when you're moving and you're constantly improving your work, and also like just trying to make connections with people and showing interest in what they're working on and contributing in some way. So
yeah, it's super important. It's one of the things, like one of my big things that is, I'm always like, you know, I like the pitch just because it's great, but also just meeting people. And I've always liked to leave really good impressions, because you're just never sure. You know, like, it's really served me well. I've met a lot of really great people who remember me, like, oh, you know, like, you know, where's that thing that you pitch? Oh, do you have any more ideas? Like, I really try to leave good impressions with people. So,
yeah, same here. Seems like you do, you know, and something I really want to point out about your story, just a bookmarked it in my mind. When you talked about the Book of Mojo crowdfunding campaign.
Yes.
But you never finished the Book of Mojo. I should point out that there still is a pattern of finishing in your story, where you finish the crowdfunding campaign.
Yes.
Like that right there is big. The content I saw of that was really highly developed. So there was a level of finishing going on there. So it's probably a no-brainer when they're like, this guy is capable of so much. He's worked on all these projects. Let's put him into the co-director seat on Hair Love. And then, you know, you obviously grabbed Jorge Gutierrez's attention.
It's a snowball effect, and to be clear, like, there snowball is a effect. There is a done version of that short. That's literally, we were just looking to try to get it through lighting and stuff, and you know, that last final push, you know, getting it through rendering and lighting and all that stuff is very complicated.
Like, expensive.
A lot of animation is done. It's expensive. It's very expensive. So that's kind of where we stalled. And at some point, you know, I'll make a webpage just dedicated to it, so I can share a lot of, like, you're right, there's so much incredible work that was done, and there was so many talented people who worked on that who are now doing really awesome things at some of the bigger studios. So
yeah,
would love to share that work with people at some point.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Wonderful. So let's touch on the subject of you doing both storyboarding and animating at a high level. Just talk to that. Like, how did that come about? How have you been able to ride both of those waves kind of simultaneously? And
yeah, that is another windy and very complicated story. So this actually kind of started right really at the beginning of my career. So when the way I got involved in animation is kind of twisted, because I was wanted to be a comic book artist at one point.
Yeah.
And I was studying illustration comic art at like SVA in New York. And
okay.
I just ended up switching majors, and because I found this like love of animation, and I was like, yeah, I really want to animate. Like, I'd seen like Toy Story and like Aladdin and a bunch of movies, and like Akira blew my mind. I was like, mm-hmm. okay, I want to learn how to animate. So as I was learning how to animate in school, one of my instructors like really loved my boards. We had a 2D animation class that actually was like part of the class was storyboarding.
Yeah.
And he actually ended up becoming my mentor. He was actually working at Big Idea at the time as like one of their like sole, you know, story artists. His mm-hmm. name is Luis Contreras.
Yeah.
I love that man. Like, I owe so much to him. He really gave me like a passion for storytelling and a passion for story art.
Yeah.
And sadly, he passed away a few years ago, but he was just so incredible. So it's one of those things where it's like, I want to animate, but this story thing, like, I ended up getting a job as a story artist. I was like, and I kind of put together, like, oh, of course, like, I wanted to be a comic book artist. So it kind of makes sense. This makes sense, right? But as I was working in story, I'm still in school, like learning animation, and I really was like, I want to animate. So I did storyboards for a couple of years while I was in school at Big Idea, right? Yeah. And then as I was doing that, I got the opportunity, like, oh, I really want to animate. They were Big Idea was developing this new show called 3-2-1 Penguins at the time.
Okay.
And I was like on the ground floor of that. So I helped, like, you know, a bunch of us got together and we helped figure out the look, and we helped figure out, like, you know, like, I modeled characters, I did some character design. We all like kind of pitched in. It was just that was the sort of spirit of it. And that was the first thing I animated on, right? And that actually got me the job. Like, I animated for this show, and then that got me a job at Blue Sky Studios on my first feature, which was the Ice Age.
Yeah.
And but because I had this like strong background in story, once I finished on Ice Age, when they were working on robots, they were like, oh, you know, I had some downtime, and they were like, well, do you want to do animation testing or do you want to do story? And they invited me to like help out in the story department. Oh. I had that story background. And that sort of set up the pace. Like, you know, I would do things where I would go and I would animate, and then between the films, I would spend a little bit of time in story. This is where it gets kind of like hilarious and complicated as usual.
Yeah, yeah.
So of course I'm like, I want to be an animator, right? And I'm doing storyboards. And then as soon as I started animating, I'm like, I really miss storyboarding.
I know. So, I relate to this so much.
Yeah. So I was like, is there a way I can get back into story? So I ended up like fighting to get back into story on right, you know, I just finished a test for Horton Hears Who.
Ooh, that, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Jimmy Hayward was directing a while back. And
yeah,
I was like, that finally made the jump, right? Okay, yeah, we're going to put you in on the ground floor on this new movie we're doing called Legend of the Leaf Men, which ended up turning into Epic.
Epic, basically. Yep.
And as I'm doing that, a good friend of mine who's in the animation department is like, hey, Everett, Pixar's looking for people. I was like, what? I'm like, that's awesome. And he's like, they're looking for animators. I was like, I just switched into the story department. And yeah. It was so tough for me, but I'm like, I really wanted to work at Pixar. I'm like, I got it. That's like the one place I want to work at. I'm like, it's no big deal. I've been rejected by them like 2 times already. So I'm like, it's no big deal. I'll put a portfolio together. They won't select me. I'll just keep I keep doing that. So, of course, you know, they end up like, yeah, we want you to. And I'm like, I have to go to Pixar. It's Pixar. And I ended up working on the first movie I worked on over there was Ratatouille. So
my favorite.
I've been, yeah, it's an amazing movie. So it was good. so much fun to work on. And before that, I would try, like when I told you I got rejected from Pixar twice, once was for The Incredibles. I really tried to get on The Incredibles because it combined my two things I love, which is superheroes and animation. And I love Brad Bird's, like, you know.
Yeah, Iron Giant.
Iron Giant was just like, oh my God. So getting on Ratatouille for me was like a huge dream. So I'm working, like I said, it gets complicated. So I worked in animation for a few years. I worked on everything from Ratatouille all the way up to Monsters University, right? Like, which was such, like, six or seven films. They were all amazing.
Yeah.
And then there was this kind of call, like, hey, we have, like, internally Pixar wanted to see if they could pull some people from animation into story, like, just to kind of test it out and see if they can get some animation sensibility in there. And I was one of the few people that they invited to be a part of that. And I was like, yes, I want to do so that. Cool. So I was actually able to make the transition, and it was great. And that's kind of, from there on, I made the decision, like, okay, I'm going to stay in animation. But by that time, I already had like 16 years of animation under my belt. So
yeah,
it was great.
But you stayed in animation, not story.
No, I actually went into story.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
So I went into story after Monsters University, and then stayed in story after that.
That's such a cool story. Really relate to it too, because I've had very similar things. It's like, to survive.
Yes.
To survive, I've been like, oh, I can storyboard too. And so I'm doing the storyboard stuff on the side, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I can animate. Oh yeah. And then there are some places where I like had to do every piece of the puzzles sometimes, you know. It's like, oh, you need a character design? Oh yeah, sure, I'll do a character design for you. Oh, you need color? Yeah, I'm really good at color. let's jump in and do some color for you.
Big idea was kind of like that for me. It was where I had to be kind of like, what they would call it, a generalist. So
yeah,
I can do, you know, character design. I can do, you know, storyboards. I can model.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's interesting though. It sounds like you've kind of been on and off a generalist in a way, at least between story and animation. And then still, as a director, that generalist mindset has probably helped a lot.
It definitely has. You know, it's like, you know, the one thing that's kind of cool is when you're in the trenches, the thing that you don't realize is like the peripherals. So like, if I'm in story, I got like a really cool peripheral of like, oh, I can see a little bit of what editing is like, is doing. I see what Viz Dev is doing, you know? And being in animation, it's like, oh, I can see downwind. I can see like, oh, what is layout doing? You know, what is lighting doing? Okay. So it really gives you like this really great like cross section of the animation process. So
yeah,
I became very familiar with a lot of it. So
it's awesome. So let's talk about that now. Let's talk about like, what were your favorite and least favorite parts about directing? Like, you don't even have to say least favorite, maybe the hardest parts, like the biggest challenges or whatnot. My dad, the bounty hunter.
Well, I will say that I genuinely found it like a very enjoyable experience. Like, it was very cool. It was, I mean, you know, I don't want to throw this word around. It was magical. It was like, it was amazing, because it's like you get a chance to really, like, you know, I've been someone who's worked for directors all the time, and like, I'm used to like trying to get them what they want. So a lot of it's sort of getting in their mindset and trying to figure out, like, asking questions. And now, you know, being in the driver's seat, it's like, oh no, I'm the guy now who they're coming to. And like, a lot of, like, you know, I think because I paid so much attention to all the different productions that I've been on, and I like to make like notes about a lot of things, like, oh, I noticed that on this production that was an issue, so I probably won't do that. Or like, oh, that worked really great on this other, you know, production, I'm gonna try that if I ever get into that situation. And I feel like it really served me well. So
yeah,
one of the things I really enjoyed the most was actually like, just kind of that the alchemy of like seeing the ideas sort of come to life. Like, I love going to the reviews and like seeing the artwork and like saying like, oh, mix that and that. And then, you know, you see these characters come to life, and like that part of it to me is always magical. I just love it so much. I love that energy. The one thing, you know, that I think is really one of the tougher aspects is, but I don't shy away from it. But I think there's that ownership where it's like, I don't know if they cover like, how do you handle when you're the boss and you have to make, you know, I mean, there's like hard decisions that you have to make or hard conversations that you have to have with people and that sort of thing. So that's something that I was like, oof, man, this is not the best thing, you know, best part of it, but it's also the most necessary because, you know, like for me, I feel like it's my job to make sure that the production is healthy, you know?
Yes.
So.
Yes. But and sometimes that people even with good intentions.
Yes.
They need a talking to, you
know? Yeah.
Or we need to work together to figure out like, if it's bad enough, sometimes it's like, hey, how can we work to fix this? Or sometimes it's just like, this is a course correction. I know this is a tough conversation, but you know, we've got to have it because we both fail if we don't have this conversation.
100%. And the thing that I know from my point of view, which is why I think it's really great. Like, you know, working for people, it's great. And then when you become a boss, when you become a director or whatever, it really shows you like, okay, so like now I know why they were asking me to do certain things and I find that like if you want to keep everything healthy, you gotta have that, you gotta be willing to be transparent and just kind of let people, like you said, like have the hard course correction where it's just like, hey, you know, I know you think this is really great, but like just kind of let them know, like, hey, this is how things are working. And yeah, one thing that you do, I know you're trying to help, but like actually creates more work. That's not that, you know, that said, you think you're just doing a really, really good job, just kind of like, you know, getting them to like change their energy where the, or change their focus, you know, without demoralizing them, right? That's the
problem. Right, absolutely. Yeah. We had the last place I was directing, there was a certain animator that they said, this animator will not work here. It's either we fire this animator or we have this animator work with you, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they said, we think you can turn her around, right? So we had a conversation and it worked. It worked. Yeah. And that animator's still at that studio. So, you know, it's great, great outcome. But, you know, that was one I sat on for a couple weeks just thinking it through and thinking, like, what is the best possible solution for this? I luckily had a bit of time. Sometimes you have to go and it's like, you need to solve this problem today. And at that point, I don't know what you do. Lock yourself in a room and just, you know, ponder. But
there's not a lot of training for that sort of thing. So, you know, that is, I don't know about you, but it wasn't surprising, but it's like, yeah, that's right. This is a big part of it. So,
yeah, I've had to read a lot of books on leadership and interpersonal communication. Here. And that's been, I think, where the training comes in, which is useful.
It is. It really is.
It's useful.
Listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff about it.
Yes, podcasts. Absolutely. That's a great way to learn. So very, very cool. And I wanted to speak more to that, but we actually did. Can we kind of back up a little bit? I really like to talk about the Book of Mojo and just, you know, just the process of crowdfunding. I actually haven't really gotten into a crowdfunding zone much in this livecast, even though I've personally done four campaigns myself. And then I helped build a company, like a video and page design team to help another company with Kickstarters. And so I have a lot of, you know, expertise in that zone, and we've never gotten to talk about it. So let's talk about crowdfunding a little bit. Like how you did it pretty early on. It wasn't as common back then.
I did it pretty early on. I was one of those the people who kind of dived in. And it's funny because, you know, I feel like I'm one of the people that's like, that you would learn from, like, you know, this is a, you know, a good case of what not to do, you know, like not that it was bad, but like, it was just like, there was a lot of things that like, there were some tips I did know. And then there's some tips that I figured out later. And people told me like, oh man, because the thing I kept hearing is like, you know, after it was done a couple months later, or you know, 6-8 months later, people are like, wait, I saw this thing. I didn't know you were doing that. I got that so much. Like, I would have totally done that. So the biggest thing that I learned was just like building that audience, you know, like just starting out and saying like, hey, you know what? I got this crazy idea. I have this comic book. I want to pitch it, you know, just like letting people in on the ground floor, like creating a page for it, and like starting to post art, like, oh, this is some stuff. Like, oh, look, I'm talking to this person, just to kind of get that conversation out there, just to sort of, you know, there's a certain amount of like social media savvy that you should have just to start to kind of build that audience.
Yeah.
And then you also, there's also this idea of like pre-prep in terms of like, you know, putting together an email list of all your friends and like letting them know like, hey, I'm going to launch this. Like if you're, you know, if you like it or you think it's cool or whatever, like let people know. And I did that, but just not to the same extent. So what you're kind of doing is like, there's a period of, I would probably say like 6 months.
Yeah.
That you want to do a pre-build. At least. Yeah. Six to eight months where you want to do a pre-build and just sort of like start to get that hype going. It can be, I've seen that it can be shorter. I think I say 6 to 8 months for what we were trying to do. We're trying to put something together where we have, you know, we're trying, oh, I want to put the funds together for, you know, do an animatic, or I want to do like, we're looking to do animation. But if you're doing something like a comic and you've got like a lot of pages done, like I think it's a little bit, you can have a smaller window, I think. Especially if you have a good following. If you're like really active on social media and you have a good following, I don't think you need quite as big a build-up. Animation for like a short, I definitely think you need that build-up. You definitely need to get that going and start getting people excited about this project. Another thing that I would probably do differently is which I thought about later, I was like, oh, that's what I should have done. Kind of do it in milestones in terms of like Kickstarter part one. The animatic, like, hey, I'm looking for this amount of money. I'm going to get a bunch of my friends together and we're going to do an animatic. And once it's done, you know, like I'm going to use it to, you know, attract talent to it. And then the next thing is like, all right, you know, we got this animatic. It looks great. You know, check it out. And you share that with, you know, share that with everyone. Right. And then say like next milestone, we're going to go for animation. So, we're putting together like crowdfunding for that, you know, so you can kind of break it out into these big, because honestly trying to get a big lump sum for all of, for a whole animation project is like, it's so difficult.
It is huge.
It's so challenging.
Yeah, my short film Kickstarter failed.
Yeah,
and I was happy about it. The reason why is because you owe a lot to, you know, as it builds up. It actually, it raised $14,000, but my goal was like 50, right?
So, yeah. And it's hard to get that lump sum. Like a buddy of mine, he does a lot of comic book Kickstarters, and he was like, oh man, he's like, he's the one who kind of gave me the idea. Like, oh, you should have done something smaller.
Yeah.
He's like, do smaller things. He's like, oh, my first project is just 5,000, because what you want to do is like, it's so much prep. Scott, it's like the build up to the prep to the Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter is you just trying to get a like establish a reputation for yourself. So he's like, I'll do something small. So that's why I was kind of like, oh man, if I did something, it was just the animatic and I had something to share with it. And like, then people knew, like, you know, if it was a small amount of money, like 5 to 10 grand, right? Probably would have made it. People go like, oh, well, he did. They look you up, go, oh, this guy, he's worked at like Pixar, Netflix, all. Yeah. I'll do it. And then they say, like, oh, he's funded something before. So you kind of get that, like, that sort of groundswell going, you know?
Yeah.
I would do it so differently now.
Oh, I know. I've done every single one of them I've done differently. And then a lot of times I'll make all these plans and it's like at least half of them fall through.
Yes.
With their productiveness of like the marketing. Like I have all these marketing plans and then it's like, oh, all of those didn't work. And honestly, the thing that works the best is like door-to-door sales is kind of what it feels like. It's like everywhere I go, I can't assume that somebody saw it on social media. You know, I'm like, I'm working on this project. And then I wait, nope, they didn't see it on social media. And then, you know, I can continue with the pitch. And, you know, I sold a lot of my books, you know, in person.
Yeah.
That's been huge. The Kickstarter actually not funding was for my short film Layers. And that one not funding was actually good because there was a grant. Like, I was able to take all of that prep that I'd put into the Kickstarter, throw a pitch together, and then get this grant. So, you know, you also have to be flexible. If it doesn't fund, that doesn't mean it's the end. You know, you can find another way to make it, even if it's you making it in your basement over 5 years, you know, you can figure out.
Which I definitely did. I definitely did. You know?
Yeah. But that paid off, right? And
it really does. It really does. Like, there's so many people who, like, they just knew about me. When I say people, I mean, like, obviously, you know, colleagues who work in the industry. But then, like, you know, because I was pitching all the time, you know, Mojo was just one of the ideas I was pitching. But everyone's like, oh, yeah, you're the, oh, man, that was really cool. And you also have, so So I got a reputation, like you said, like I've got like all these assets and like I'd work with these people and like it looked, it was really good quality. So people were like, well, this is what this guy can do scraping by. Like I wonder what, like, you know, that he could probably handle a crew and he probably can work with a budget and that sort of thing. So
yeah,
people, and then people remember that, you know, it really serves me. It really served me well.
Right. I think I'd like to throw a little caveat just for some feedback that I've gotten from different audience members and guests before, where we're all talking about this is great. I've met a lot of people who dreamt of becoming a director and they start going down this path. Like they're like, okay, now I'm pitching. Yeah. Oh, I hate this. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
And I think that it's okay. It's okay to hate
yes,
it.
Yes, it is.
If it's something you like, I think Martin Scorsese in his masterclass said, if you don't like, if you think that it'd be fun to be a director, this course is not for you. If this is like, you can't do anything else, this course is for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's something like you feel like you might hate it, but you just can't not do it, then yeah, keep doing it. Keep doing it. Absolutely. Keep hustling it. And you can see that every one of these things that may look like a failure, like Book of Mojo, it's not a failure. You completed the Kickstarter campaign. You've completed most of the short film. Someday you'll have a website dedicated to it and you'll be able to show that work you finished. Mm-hmm. And you developed yourself as a person, you know, and then when you were able to direct on Hair Love, you know, you were able to deliver and hit a home run there, you know, and same with Maya and the Three and with My Dad, the Bounty Hunter, you know, I watched whole series, by the way, as preparation for this. So,
oh, fantastic. Awesome. Yeah. Hopefully you enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it. Yeah. The kids enjoyed it too.
That's good. Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I mean, that was that show was so special. Like the crew was just amazing and they put a lot of passion and heart into it. I feel like you can feel it when you watch the show. Like you can feel it's all in all the pixels. So yeah, it was an amazing experience.
What is one of the things that you learned on Book of Mojo that you don't feel like you could learn anyway, but it still benefits you today?
You know what? There's one thing, yeah. It's kind of that what you're saying of like learning, and I think this is anytime you do indie stuff is like making things work, making things work, figuring out how to like think on your feet and like improvise and you just get this level of hustle. Like you just get this like, oh no. Like, so, you know, you kind of become unflappable. Right. So it's just like, no, I've worked on this project that I had like no money, like hardly any money for. And then like, we had to make certain things work and like, the pipeline was broken at one point. We had to figure out all this stuff. Like, oh, this isn't working. These things aren't rendering anymore. Why? You know, tracking it down. So by the time, you know, I got on something official and you got like real support and like real, it's like, oh, this thing's happening. Like, oh yeah, no, that's no problem. But like everything seems like, I don't want to say easy, but like you're just used to that, like that hustle that you have to do, you know?
It's not that it's easy. It's just possible.
It's just possible. And you're just used to like, okay, so, all right, that's, you know, you've kind of proven yourself like on a smaller form. So, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It's really great.
That's a cool one. Is there anything you've learned from working on a big production that you couldn't have learned working on a indie production?
Oh yeah. I mean, obviously the, you know, working on Dad is the first time I was plugged all the way through. And it's a machine. It's a bigger machine. So you realize it's like, okay, cool. So, you know, there are so many moving parts. Like once, you know, the farthest I think I gotten was like starting to get into lighting, but this is like post, you know, sound, you know what I mean? Like really getting in on like locks and like shipping things to the studio.
Putting things at the like, right amount of quality, right? Dialing that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. There's also, you know, and this kind of goes back to that question you were asking earlier, like what are some of the things that I learned is unexpected. And just like, you know, I came from feature. So like, you know, working on a series was very different. It's a different pace. And you realize something, it's like, you know, oh, we were going for a certain quality. And I think we really were able to get an amazing quality, especially considering the budget. I think our show looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Absolutely. Like some of the best rigs in a show of that quality I've ever seen.
Oh, it's, man.
Yeah.
So impressed with Dwarf. But then there's things like, you know, on an animated feature, like a shot will come through, like it can count through like 3, 4, or 5 times. And it's like, no, you get 2 passes at this. And it's like, what? And learning to prioritize, like, Okay. All right, cool. So, you know, the face animation, is that can work, you know, and just prioritizing, like, the biggest things first. Oh. Hey, if you can, like, hit this first, and then, like, if you can get back, if not, don't worry about it. Like, you got to compromise. You got to be able to, like, go, like, oh, yes, I want this to be better, but what's the most impactful changes that I can make to make this shot better, you know? So that's definitely a different skill.
It is, especially in a few passes, you know?
Yes.
That's something I'm learning right now, actually. You know, we want to show on the project I'm working on the client only a few times. It's like, oh, if we only want to show three times, I have to get this done in each of these passes. And so, it's a good learning curve to go on.
It is.
When you,
a lot of compromise.
When you do, I'm sure you do a lot of interviews. Is there a question you just wish people would ask you about?
Oh, man. You know, I think you're doing a pretty good job. There's not really, like, I mean, I'm trying to think of, you got some really good ones, because, like, you know, I never get a lot of questions about the nitty-gritty in terms of, like, even, like, the crowdfunding stuff. And so I think that stuff is fun. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I'd really love to kind of share with you guys. You know what? One thing I think is really great is that I touched on it, but I'm really proud of is just like working on these shorts and like working with the talented people who are on it. Like, I'm really proud of like a lot of them, like being able to like kind of go on. And, you know, sometimes you're in a situation where it's like, I always try to pay at least something but sometimes, you know, like I'm always like trying to pay it forward. Right. So if someone is working for me, I will say like, definitely use anything that you've done here in the portfolio, and they have to really great effect. Like, I'm really proud to say, like, a lot of people have gone on to work at places like Pixar, Netflix, and Disney. So I'm really happy about that.
That is really huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because you had your passion project. That's what's so beautiful about animation, is that you have your passion project, and you're bringing in people to work on it, but you have the ability to, like, unleash this power in all these different people that you're working with, which is just, I mean, that's just extremely invigorating. And I'm glad you see that.
Yeah. You know, one thing we talked about, Scott, before we went on was like how sometimes it's like, you know, it's really hard to get original content out there. Yeah. And, I really do feel like indie is like a really great way to do it. It's also a really good way to kind of prove yourself.
Yes.
And this also touches back to what you were talking about earlier about like, it's just something that I want to do. When it comes to directing and stuff. And I remember there was a point where I decided, like, I could stay, this is right when I decided I was going to start pitching, I could stay where I'm at and be totally happy and just animate and just be cool. Like, you know, just do my own comics, like, whatever, just chill out. Or I could try this, but I don't know if I like it. I think I want to direct, but I don't know if I like it. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I worked on a short. And working on a short, it was very hard. And it was very difficult. But then when I did, I was like, yeah, I kind of have to do that. So you really do have to have that sort of moment where, and I recommend anybody who's really interested in directing, direct a short, you know, direct something short and digestible. If nothing else, you might find like, that was awful, I never want to do it again. Or you might find like, oh, that was fun, I don't know if I have the talent for it. Like, that's what I was worried about.
Or if you'd rather just animate. Which is okay.
Or if you rather just
animate, may even have the talent for it, but you may be just like, I really love animating, you know?
Yes.
I just want to do this. And it's like, yes, do it, you know? You don't have to be something that you're not. And that's a great lesson to learn. I also love that your Emmy, this is something we talked about beforehand, but your Emmy came kind of unexpectedly, right? Like out of the blue.
You
weren't really aiming for it. I actually had an experience in college where I was sitting with this teacher who I frustrated her to no end because she didn't know what to do with this. She taught people who wanted to be in news generally, right? I'm like, I want to be an animator. And she's like, what in the world? I don't know how to help you. So we're sitting in the office. She's talking about how frustrated she is with me. And this guy walked in with an Emmy.
Oh, wow.
And to show his teacher, like, look what I did. And she looked at me and she's like, this guy drove me nuts. And that's like, you drive me nuts. And
that's amazing. It's so funny. Like, I was totally not expecting it. Which I guess makes it like a really awesome surprise.
Yeah.
I got the opportunity to direct a short. So basically, I got the Emmy for working on We the People, which was a combination of Christie's company and the Obama's company, Higher Ground.
Right.
And basically, it was kind of like a nod to like Schoolhouse Rock and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a lesson about civics. And I got that opportunity I think it was in an odd space because like I just finished on My Under Three.
Right.
The hair loss stuff was happening, but like it hadn't won the Academy Award yet. And
yeah,
my dad, the bounty hunter, was starting to we were starting to negotiate the contract for that. And she kind of came and she asked me to be a part of it. And I was like, yes, that sounds amazing. So, it's just funny. I would say 2 years, 2 years prior, 3 years prior, I would never have expected to be in that position. I was in a very bad place 2 years prior. I was like, what's happening?
Which is one of those other things you have to go through. You have to go through that really bad place.
Yeah, it was bad. I was like working on stuff. I'm like, this is not what I got into animation to do.
And
I was like, maybe I should start teaching. Like maybe I'm not going to, I've been pitching for a while. Nothing was catching. So it was super frustrating. Very frustrating. Mm-hmm. So then just fast forward. I've never, if you would have told me, you'll be where I am now, 3 years ago, I'd be like, you're crazy. No way. No way. It's not good. That's impossible.
That's awesome. We definitely tend to underestimate 3 years. We tend to overestimate what we can do in one and underestimate what we can do in 3 years. So,
yes. 100%.
So my last question I usually do on these shows is called the Get Wiser Moment. So we can get wiser, right?
Or
I'm trying to be wiser, right? That's my last name.
But, I love it.
So the question is, if my goal is to get the highest concentration of truth into a story, what approach would you recommend?
Wow, the highest amount, man. You hit us with the tough questions at the end. That's a really great question. Okay, so this is actually very topical because it was very important when I was working on We the People, and also there's a short that I've been kicking around in my head that is also I want to be truthful and impactful.
Yeah.
And I think the way that you do it is you have to be completely honest with yourself in terms of really, sit back and take a look. And it's hard. It's hard to be this
vulnerable.
What's the word? Vulnerable and also kind of objective.
Objective. That's what
Yeah. It's really hard to kind of get objective. This is it. This is how you do it. First of all, you kind of sit down and you have that conversation. Am I BSing anything? Is this what am I really trying to say? And really getting to the heart of what that is. And once you think you're there and you put it together, get 4 to 5 of your closest friends who are very critical.
Honest with you. Yeah.
And honest, and they're not afraid to be. And then you tell them and then, let's see if it passes their BS meter.
Uh-huh.
And then if it doesn't, then you got to question that. And then you got to be vulnerable and objective and open-minded to really think take yourself kind of out of the equation and say okay, if this is a story I'm trying to tell, what is the way to tell the story that stays true to what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and also something just to add on to that, because I've been doing that a lot lately with some things I'm developing. This approach you talk about, being as vulnerable as I can and as objective and as dig down, and then put it in front of 5 people. I will say that it might seem painful at first. Just lean into that. Just lean into it. It's that good kind of weightlifting pain.
It is.
Yeah, it's the pain that builds muscle, and eventually you'll enjoy it. So yeah, that was brilliant advice. My last guest said, be disarmingly honest. I loved that.
Oh,
so when you say something to somebody and they're like, I can't believe that he just told me that, that's the kind of effect you want with your storytelling.
That's the feedback that I think makes a difference. I'll share a really quick story with you.
Awesome.
Back when I was at Pixar, I was working on Mojo as a comic book, right? And I had this really great idea that I thought was super clever. And I was like, I want to pass it through a few people. And so I made like a pretty much like a mini brain trust. There were some people, like a couple, the head of story in there, some of my really good like story friends, and one of my really good friends who was in development, was in the development department. And I pitched this whole thing to them, and I sat back, and they were just like, boom. It was like hit after hit after hit and all these things. And I was like, thank you very much. It's afterwards, just like getting beaten with bamboo poles and then saying, thank you so much. And they walk out of the room. But I tell you what, it hurt for the next couple, like day and a half, I would say.
Yeah.
But then I got to the point like, wait, what if I did this? And there were a few things I just stripped out.
Yeah.
And what came out of that was so much stronger than what was in there before. So it's just, don't shy away from it. You got to do it. The sooner you do it, the better.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been so good to have you on the show. Is there any places or thing that you want people to follow right now and to pay attention to? Mailing lists or social media?
You can find me, like, I'm on Instagram. I'm Edog Downing on Instagram, or like, I think I'm at Mr. Scribbles on Twitter.
Great.
You can find my webpage at edowning.com, but I'm looking at upgrading that soon.
Great.
Watch My Dad the Bounty Hunter. It's streaming on Netflix right now, and it's I think it's a really super fun show, so check it out.
It's getting a great response. It's a good one.
Thank you.
Okay, take care, and until next time, I hope we all get a little wiser.
Thank you for watching the Directing Animation Livecast, hosted by Scott Weiser, audio version edited by Kira Horowitz, copyright Scott Weiser LLC 2022. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube and ring that notification bell.